is Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're going to be here till 11 o'clock, thanks to GoNetSpeed, with no commercial interruptions. Very excited about that. Here to talk about your technology issues. And nowadays, our technology issues are impacted by power issues. And we are very lucky to have on the hotline with us Peter Kelly Detweiler. He has over 30 years of experience in the electric energy industry. He's currently a leading consultant, researcher, speaker, and trainer in the electric industry, helping clients navigate the rapid evolution and complexities of the electric power grid. And he's got a book out, The Transformation of Electric Power Markets, The Energy Switch, How Companies and Customers Are Transforming the Electric Grid and the Future of Power, which is really what's happening. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we hear a lot on our show about being computer illiterate. Okay. So If you then equate that with being electric illiterate, I would think that's the rest of us.
Yeah.
We have no idea how our toaster gets power. We don't have any idea. We just plug the toaster in and it magically toasts my muffin, my English muffin. And so I think too many of us are completely electrically illiterate as far as how this all works, and it's causing a lot of our troubles when it comes to understanding our electric bill, understanding why it costs so much, and then of course all this AI data center controversy where people are all up in arms about siting data centers next to nuclear power plants. We figured let's talk to Peter, an electric expert, to figure out what is going on. So where do you want to start with this? I mean, obviously we understand what electricity is generally, but do you want to give an overview of how we get the juice to our toaster?
Yeah, that's a really good place to start. First of all, this is the power grid is the most complex and far-reaching machine that's been developed by mankind so far.
Yep.
And if you think about that power grid, what it's now doing is we're starting to, of course, electricity is what powers data. It powers data centers, it powers sensors, and at some level we're building out a second central nervous system for humanity. Only all this is now sensors and electricity. Just like in our bodies, we've got our nerves and then we have our central nervous system and we're doing the same thing globally.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's fascinating about the grid is, first of all, it used to be that it was like a one-way highway. We had centralized generating stations, and we had large transmission lines, and then we had the distribution network that delivers the power to our homes and our factories. And when you drive by those, big transformer stations, what you're seeing is where the massive electricity generated by the likes of the Millstone nuclear plant, coal plants, gas plants, where that voltage gets stepped down and then delivered to the distribution system. And then those transformers, those trash cans you see outside our homes, voltage gets dropped down again so that our devices can actually consume that. Now, all this used to be one way. Now we start to see, people putting electric vehicles in their homes, and those can actually backfeed the grid, solar on the rooftop, and batteries in people's garages. Now, for the first time, the customer is interacting with the grid in a completely new way, which alone creates a lot of new uncertainty and dynamics and opportunities for economic efficiencies and so on.
Yep.
Then, in the centralized grid, now we have this climate change issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real concern that if we, warm up the planet too much, we've got problems. And the goal is to try and minimize warmth to 1.5 degrees centigrade. Mm-hmm. Now, to put that in perspective, if we were to cool the planet 6 degrees centigrade, we would be back in the middle of the Laurentian Ice Age under about a mile of ice. So every degree, really does matter.
Mm-hmm.
So now that means with a power grid, what are we trying to do? We're trying to add wind and solar and batteries and now even small modular nuclear reactors. And there's a race on for electrons. In the transportation industry is decarbonizing because we're going to put electrons into vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you now have this new exciting industry around data centers driven by artificial intelligence. And the idea is that machine learning can do everything from helping us design new drugs,
mm-hmm.
design new materials, even in the power grid. For example, there are computers that can calculate 60 quadrillion calculations per second, even 1,000 quadrillion calculations per second at some of the best national labs like Oak Ridge. Some of these computers are actually designing new molecules that have never existed before in the history of the world to make better solar panels, better batteries, and so on and so forth. But also, you know, there's the whole large language models for all the things that AI is doing everywhere else.
Yep. Yep.
Well, your typical search, for example, with a ChatGPT or Perplexity AI takes 10 times the energy of a Google search. So this stuff is super data intensive.
Yeah.
And there's a race on, and I just finished a 35-page paper on global data center provisioning.
Oh, neat.
How's the power grid around the world going to do this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And to give you an idea of the numbers being thrown around right now. So ISO New England, the grid you and I live on,
yep.
the maximum peak generating capacity in ISO New England is 29,000, let's say 30,000 megawatts.
Yep.
American Electric Power has 15,000 megawatts of applications for AI data centers. Xcel Energy, 8,000. Encore in Texas, 40-plus thousand megawatts, bigger than the whole New England power grid.
Yep.
So the Texas grid might have to actually double within the next 10 years to meet this new demand. That's just simply not going to happen. There's no way we can build the new power lines and the generating plants in time. And at the same time, you know, I was at a conference last week keynoting in Chicago on electric vehicles.
Yep.
And there were all these folks from, you know, the automobile manufacturers and others up front. And I said, and I laid out these stats and I said, are you concerned that the same electrons you want for electric vehicles are the ones the data centers want? And they said, absolutely.
Right.
And there's a zero-sum game here. So now, well, how does this play into what we're talking about right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in March, Talen Energy, which is the owner of the Susquehanna nuclear plant, signed a deal with Amazon Web Services. And Amazon said, basically, we're going to buy the land right at the nuclear data center, or nuclear power plant, excuse me, and we're going to locate a data center there that's going to be 960 megawatts. Now,
yep.
to put that in perspective, Millstone is what, like 2,073 megawatts? So it'd be almost 50% of Millstone.
Yep.
To take that further in perspective, Millstone supplies almost half of the electricity in Connecticut.
Yep.
So one big data center could consume up to a quarter of the electricity that Connecticut currently consumes. That's the kind of scale we're talking about here.
Right. And that's okay. the controversy, right, Peter? I mean, people are nervous that if this data center keeps consuming all the power, then we're not going to have any energy for us here in Connecticut. And as it is, energy is a problem in Connecticut.
Right. And so now you also think about where's the challenge today in New England to get enough electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because we have two gas pipelines and we could use three for about 10 days in the winter. In fact, one year we were one day away from burning through all of our backup oil that we keep in these huge tanks.
Yikes.
If we'd had one more cold day, we would have had rolling blackouts.
Wow.
So now what we do is we take this 29,000 megawatt system, mm-hmm. which typically we don't consume that much. And we would potentially, if we took away Millstone and did it all for data centers, we'd pull out about 7% of total generation of our maximum peak,
yep.
and of our average consumption, it would be much larger than that. Like today, if you look, we're probably using 14,000 megawatts at this moment in time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So if you were to rip out, and what's going on is, it's not just AWS, all these data center companies are saying, well, we're in this arms race right now to build these data centers as fast as we can, because whoever climbs the peak first and sets the standards, everybody else chases.
Right.
So they don't even care about the cost of power, relatively speaking, compared to everyone else, because the stakes of profit and loss are so huge in what they're trying to accomplish. Power is kind of a round-off error. So they can throw around money and do stuff nobody else can.
Right. How crazy is that?
This is something we've never seen before. And a year ago, nobody was talking about this issue, Eric. I read 40 newsletters every day, and I scan about 150 article titles.
Yeah.
And this really didn't pop up on the radar until maybe 9 months ago. And then when that Talen announcement and Amazon Web Service in March, all of a sudden everyone said, oh, here it comes.
Yep.
And so now here are some of the issues. First of all, you take the existing supply-demand resource, and you yank out one of these critical baseload generators that runs 24/7, right?
Yep.
So now what's going to happen? You essentially, as an economist, It's what I was trained in. You're shifting the entire supply-demand curve, so all things being equal, prices will be higher.
Yep.
Then the next thing you've done is the grid in New England is built and predicated on certain power flows. And so now you're going to basically take, if you were to have Millstone be dedicated to a data center, now your power flows would be different. And so now you have all these transmission issues because the grid is a highway.
Yep.
And essentially power flows in certain directions based upon volumes and consumption. And it kind of looks for the vacuum, right? So So this changes the power flow issues. And a lot of the opponents of this are saying, whoa. For example, the issue in with Talen and the Susquehanna plant, they're saying this could cost ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another issue. Now, here's another one. Your average nuclear power plant is up for about 2 years, and then it has to go down for maintenance.
Yep.
Okay. So what happens during that period of 3 weeks or 4 weeks or however long it is when it goes down for maintenance?
That's a lot of hamsters in the wheel you got to get out.
Yeah, does the data center just flop over and go inert for 2 months or
no.
a month? When I don't think so.
They're going to bring in a lot of mobile oil generators that they use now in a lot of these data centers.
No, you couldn't do it it would be very cost prohibitive, but maybe they could. Yeah. Otherwise, they'd be trying to connect to the grid and pull that power from the grid, representing this rapid new supply that didn't exist.
Right.
So there's this last issue. So in, many states around the country, Connecticut, no exception, you have these goals to decarbonize the economy and reduce by 2030, 45% of your greenhouse gas emissions from your 2001 levels.
Mm-hmm.
So now what happens? The nukes were a huge part of the carbon-free energy resource in Connecticut. And essentially, what you did was you just took that out of the mix. Mm-hmm. So I saw one analogy that said it'd be like if you were in the Olympics and you were sprinting and all of a sudden you looked up and somebody just moved the finish line away from you.
Yep.
And so, it has all these multiple issues. So it's not a surprise that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is responsible for market design and for generation in all states where there's interstate flows of power, New England's certainly one area, Mid-Atlantic's another one, they've now said, well, let's before we bless this contract, because they have to, the feds have to say okay to it, let's have a hearing on all these issues. It'll be a generic hearing, not specifically related to this particular AWS and Talen deal, but bigger, because as you alluded to before, when we talked about all these data center companies are now looking at co-locating with nukes and pulling that power because they're desperate to get those electrons as quickly as they can. And it takes 3+ years to build and site a new plant in the best scenarios. And in many places in this country, there's something called the interconnection queue, Eric, which is if you want to build a new supply resource, you have to connect it to the wires. You have to connect it to transmission. And the studies take years. In some cases, the queue can be 5 years or longer. So that's another reason the data centers want to short circuit this whole process, jump right onto the existing nukes. But what does it mean? It means everybody else is left in that interconnection queue and they won't get supply for years and years and years. So that's the inherent issue of what's at stake here.
And the funny thing is, too, Peter, we're talking to Peter Kelly, Detweiler. He's an energy expert, has been in this field for more than 30 years about energy. The other thing about this, we've got our legislature here in Connecticut that pushed back in 2021 a way to incentivize data centers to come here to Connecticut. But this is always the case with these legislators. They don't think of what they're doing as far as how are you going to power it? What are you going to do with all this stuff? And now here we are. And the thing with innovation and technology, it happens very, very quickly. I mean, the internet here in Connecticut is finally competitive after 24 years, right? Imagine, we can't wait 24 years to solve this energy problem. We can't keep dealing with all these site issues. We can't keep dealing with all these regulatory delays if we want to do what we want to do with power and data centers. We have to be more nimble. We have to be more just quick about it. But they're setting these incentives to slam them in here in Connecticut and be the center of data centers, but they didn't think about who's going to power it. It feels very similar to electric vehicles. Hey, let's get a lot of electric vehicles going, but we won't really worry about how you're going to charge them, right? And now they're making the rest of us pay for those too here in Connecticut. We now have to pay for electric vehicle chargers, whereas when gas vehicles came along, gas stations are like, hey, I'll sell you gas. No, here in Connecticut, the rest of us have to do that. So it seems backwards. Do you have any solutions for this? Do you have any thoughts? Obviously, we're going to hit a wall, I would think, right?
Yeah, I think that, certainly it's a zero-sum game. There's only so right. much that can be done so quickly. So first, a couple of issues. One is, yep, we can go to a gas station and we can fill up, and in theory, we're not asking anyone to bear economic costs. But right. in fact, we are. But the economic costs are borne in the form of asthma, climate change,
sure.
oil spills, all those other things.
Oh, yeah.
So those
yep.
are
fair enough.
Those are externalities that are not priced in, right?
Yep.
So one of the challenges in a modern economy that is so complex and interlinked is, if you don't look at this in terms of systems, you're bound to make mistakes, because you get this loom in front of you and you yank on yarn here and something moves over here and you're like, well, why the heck did that happen?
Right.
Well, it happened because the whole thing is interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means, unfortunately, these are not simple one-off decisions. They involve a lot of nuanced conversation. Our political system doesn't do that very well. And then if you look to the supply side, Eric,
yes.
okay, let's say we did want to build, 1,000 megawatts of new generation yeah. in Connecticut to provision data centers because it would create jobs and all that.
Mm.
Where the heck are we going to put it? Who's going to let anybody build lines through their, their landscape anymore?
Right.
I mean, those are the challenges that are facing us right now. Now, some of the future state solutions, but they're somewhat out in the future, are things like modular nuclear reactors, which are
yeah.
small.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit.
Yep. But the first ones won't be built at a minimum until 2027, 2028. There's a company called Oklo that signed 600 megawatts as of last week
mm-hmm.
of letters of intent with data centers. Now, these are really cool little units because they're like 15 megawatts or 50 megawatts. So 40 of them would equal the size of Millstone. And they will build them in factories the same way they build modular homes, so
yeah.
they can do the quality control and ship all the parts on rail or trucks
yeah.
and then assemble them on site. And perhaps even better, the designs are typically fail-safe. In today's nuclear plant, if you lose power and you lose your power to your backup generation, which cools the plant, then you have a meltdown.
Right.
That's what almost happened in Fukushima, and it's the concern in Zaporizhia right now, is if they lose the diesel that cools that plant, that's when you could have a meltdown.
Okay.
These new designs are inherently designed that if the generation stops, the plant stops, and there's no more fission, and there's no risk.
Hmm.
So that's one of the other beauties.
That
now,
sounds
you
great.
Still have the issue. Yeah, you still have the issue of waste.
Yeah,
and you still have the issue of upfront cost, because these are new designs. No one's built them before, and it's kind of like the first car off the lot of
yeah.
a new model is expensive if you looked at it and isolated it just by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to build dozens of them and get the contracts for dozens of them. But modular nuclear does have and hold the promise, let's say 10 years out,
mm-hmm.
to be scalable and built out in large numbers. And places like Poland and other places are signing contracts to get this done by 2028, 2029, 2030, but you won't see it mainstream earlier, probably than the middle of the next decade.
So the other thing too, if you think about this, Peter, when we first started in our business, both Dennis and I, we came from mainframe environments, right? When in the 90s, we had these quote unquote data centers, right? And then we all went distributed. Now we've got individual servers and PCs. In the past 20 or 30 years, has all been, each company has their own local servers, their local compute, their local PC power. And now we've gone back to the mainframe concept, where we have to stick these massive data centers next to power plants. We have plenty of compute, though. We have plenty of excess compute and excess process that, imagine if we just thought of, have you heard of the SETI project, where you would just run your CPU
yes.
in the background? Imagine the
yep.
concept of data sharing back on the systems that are already distributed, and maybe the AI technology can be utilized where they pay us to use our idle PC time, because we've got plenty of idle PC time. And if you do that, now you've distributed the process across the planet where it already has enough power to deal with this. You're not dealing with one massive data center. I know I'm just talking out of my butt here, but the idea
yeah.
here is, if you've got
yeah.
all this extra compute, which we do have, with servers and workstations everywhere, maybe they could rethink how the AI gets its understanding, and we don't have to deal with this massive amount of electric draw. Although I would like to see more improvement in our electric grid, because this is going to drive that. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about that, or is this just a crazy idea?
Yeah, I actually talked with a client about 5 years ago about that sort of Hive approach. Now, the challenge here is you have special chips that are designed specifically for AI and large language learning.
Yeah.
But I think other things like storage of cat videos and things where you're just talking processing, all the pictures we all get today. I mean, we take 20 pictures.
Yeah.
You know, and for the one good one, we don't throw away the other 19 because, well, we might want them sometime later, right?
Yeah.
So there's issues where low latency is not a concern, which is obviously hogging up a lot of data around the world. I think you could come up with a SETI approach for something like that. For these specific large language models, it's my understanding that you need these specialized chips and there's advantages to, you know, concentrating these in certain facilities.
Gotcha.
But nobody's looking at this holistically. It's a very competitive game, and no one's really trying to figure out, well, what's the optimal way to do this for society right now? One of the hopes is that artificial intelligence could be enlisted to make a more efficient grid. And if you think about that, work with me for a second here.
Yeah.
Our grid today is sized for the maximum peak demand on the hottest day in the summer.
Right. We've got power plants that actually are sitting idle most of the year. They get paid to sit.
Correct. Yeah. And so it's not just the power plants, it's also the wires and poles that surround all of us, right? The local distribution grid. So if we ran airlines that way, two days before Thanksgiving, everybody could go to the gate, grab a ticket with no advance warning, and get anywhere in the country for less than $300. And the rest of the year, those planes would be 41 to 42% full, because that's how the grid is right now. It's 41 to 42% capacity utilization.
Interesting. Okay.
Now imagine a world where you have a lot of solar out there, and take the SETI model you just talked about.
Yep.
Take solar, put it on people's rooftops, put batteries in garages, put electric vehicles, and the EV battery, your Ford F-150, the little one, that battery can power a home for about 4 days. It's about 6 times larger than the stationary power wall that a Tesla has that would go in your garage, right?
Wow.
So now let's say we could take artificial intelligence and understand where all those EV batteries are. And right now, there's already 5 million electric vehicles in the country. It represents around 9% of vehicles sold every year, EVs. And pretty soon, it's going to be a pretty sizable fleet with batteries on wheels. And the average vehicle is only in motion 5% of the time.
Right.
Okay. So what this means is, just the same way we have this compute capability distributed all over the world that no one's using, we're going to have this enormous storage potential that's already paid for because people use it for locomotion.
Yep.
But 95% of the time, it's idle. It is a perfect challenge and opportunity for artificial intelligence because there's no way humans could do it.
No.
Right? And so aggregating that data, figuring out when to deploy, when to charge the vehicles first, then when to discharge the ones that can, and pulling all that back and then figuring out, well, how much data do you get and where do you aggregate it? How do you pull that back into the control room in ISO New England in Holyoke so it doesn't explode the operator's head there because it's too much data? And same thing with, you know, National Grid and so on. Like, this is a huge opportunity.
Sounds
for,
good.
Again, if you think about the power grid, it's all about the how much, the where, the when, and the how long.
So,
it
Peter,
is an enormous data play.
We're coming up against a hard break. Can you stick around after the news and talk some more?
Absolutely. We'd be happy to.
All right. We'll talk some more with Peter Kelly Detweiler about energy. We've learned a lot. We're becoming less energy illiterate, thanks to Peter. And I hope you guys are enjoying this conversation, because I sure am. So stick around. Everything we've talked about has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. We'll be right back.
Computer Talk with Tab is powered by GoNet Speed, bringing you lightning-fast fiber internet. Visit GoNetSpeed.com for pricing and availability.
All right, and we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're also on the line with Peter Kelly Detweiler. He is an energy expert. If you couldn't tell from the last half hour, I don't even need to give you any more than what you've just listened to. Peter knows his stuff when it comes to moving electrons. And we're talking about the issue that we have here at Millstone, possibly, where there's a quote-unquote controversy, even though we as a state have decided to set up all sorts of incentives, you know, all these tax carve-outs and property tax carve-outs, and you don't have to pay tax for forever to come here and plop your data center here next to Millstone. You know, we've got this potential for being a state where the data centers could start popping up, but we are wondering whether or not we, the ratepayers, are going to end up paying for it. And that's, you know, Peter's been on to talk about how energy works, how the grid works, how maybe distributing batteries that we already have distributed across the state could benefit by pushing it back, and ironically using the AI to figure that out. So, Peter, welcome back.
Thank you.
So when it comes down to, you know, our legislature is trying to make us a data center friendly state. But obviously the thing about Connecticut is we're not really power friendly. We're not necessarily friendly to business. We're a very expensive state. So they've done all these carve outs. Is it a chicken or the egg thing? They said, well, we'll just cut out and make it so affordable for these data centers to come here, and we'll worry about the grid later. Is that kind of what you see? Or do you think Connecticut even has a chance to compete with some of these other states that are really booming when it comes to AI data centers?
Well, I think it's always going to be a secondary player, but here's why. So when I was doing this 30-plus page study, I had a look at where data centers are built now. And the big area in this country is, it surprised me where it was, but it shouldn't have. It's outside D.C. in Virginia,
yes.
In Dominion Energy Service Territory. And there they have, I don't know, 6,000 or 7,000 megawatts of data centers right now. And they've got like another 4,000 or 5,000, you know, in various phases. In fact, the utility at one point said, whoa, you know, hold the phone. We can't build the resources and the transmission fast enough, and they put a temporary moratorium on it, then they opened it back up again.
Yeah.
But if you look at the huge areas of growth in the United States, it's going to be places like Texas, where there's lots of land,
mm-hmm.
where the space is, you know, big, right? So you can put in, you could, for example, put in a bunch of data centers, some gas generation, or even wind and solar and batteries, that sort of thing. Bitcoin mining, for example. When the Chinese cracked down on Bitcoin mining,
it
popped up. It was like when you push down on the balloon, you know, in the pool, and it pops up someplace else. It jumped over to Texas in no time.
Did it?
And Bitcoin mining is much more energy cost sensitive than AI, because the profitability, I mean, Bitcoin mining is a function of the cost of electricity and the efficiency of the machines.
You know,
AI and large language models, that's completely different. It doesn't care, really.
Right. In the case of the Bitcoin mining in Texas, the Bitcoin miners, as big companies down there, actually were paid more money not to mine by the power plants. Because, again, Bitcoin is just, as far as I'm concerned, ridiculous. But we can skip that for now.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
No, it produces no purpose. It just burns electricity again. Imagine if we didn't have Bitcoin, how much more power we would have for AI. I wonder if you asked AI if Bitcoin made any sense, they'd be like, well, it doesn't.
Probably not. I'm not a huge fan either. I see huge data centers, few jobs created, and speculative wealth won and lost every day. But I still haven't found the underlying value prop that tells me that Bitcoin makes sense to society.
It makes no sense. And we had a story, and this is kind of the reason you're even on the air. I brought this up on a Tuesday Tech Talk with the morning host about Virginia's data center. They're guzzling water like there's no tomorrow.
Yes.
And there was a FOI request that had to come out. Now, why do we have to FOIA this type of thing, right? So, again, government incentivizes the data centers to go in there, but they won't tell you what's going on. And it looks like, according to the Register, BitBarns in some areas have increased markedly over the past 5 years by almost 2/3. And it's basically, they have claimed more than 1.85 billion gallons of water.
Yep. Yes.
So I've heard this, and you probably have heard this as well, that water is going to be the commodity that we're all going to be fighting over in the future, yet we're pouring it into data centers so that we can do our cat videos, to your point.
Yeah. You want to live in the Great Lakes.
right.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, so fracking also is amazingly water intensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's millions of gallons of water per well. And so there have been some water wars in Texas around fracking. So, yeah, water becomes increasingly a more challenging issue as time goes on. So, yeah, again, we're back to the systems of systems thing, right? You make a decision here without thinking about what all the downstream consequences are, and someone else ends up paying the freight for it.
Right. Now, you've been in this industry for a long time. I mean, again, we're kind of electronically illiterate here. We look at the 40-foot poles in the ground, and we just hope the power gets to our homes. Thinking of ISO New England, thinking of our New England power grid here, you talked about us being a day away from being blacking out here. How precarious are we? And even though we only use 50% of the power, as we continue to add more things that are chewing up juice here in New England, how far behind are we from generation that we really need to really ramp this up? It feels to me like we really are way behind. That's what it feels like to me, but I'm talking to an expert. So what do you think?
Yeah, there's going to have to be a lot more, transmission built in some instances and more generation resources. I mean, certainly offshore wind will help, but again, you have that issue where it doesn't run 24/7, so you're going to have to balance it with other resources. Mm-hmm. It's one reason, for example, you might have seen this, but there's this company called Form Energy, and it first started in Cambridge, Mass. Now they're building this massive battery factory in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And Eric, this is cool. It is a reverse rust battery. So Neil Young was right. Rust never sleeps. So when the process of oxidation, electricity is actually released. So they're building these like, they're like large steel marbles. Uh-huh. And they put them in these containers about the size of a washing machine, and then they stack them up. And these things basically can give you 100 hours of duration. So, 4 days, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is you could start to build the lithium-ion batteries in our grid today are cost-effective for maybe 4 hours, maybe six. And we're starting to already see batteries proliferate around New England to help firm up renewables.
Yeah.
But the idea is you could start to bring in these other assets so that if wind doesn't blow for 2 or 3 days in meaningful quantities, well, you've already stored it. So what we're going to see in a future grid is, yes, there will still be a bunch of large generating assets.
Right.
We're going to have to decarbonize the grid for the reasons we discussed, and maybe the flood in Connecticut and Vermont and some of the other things we've seen, your massive storms, 10 years ago, the October one, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's some freaky stuff going on with climate and weather, right? So the concern is, well, maybe this is climate change driven, so we got to deal with this carbon issue.
Mm.
All right, so then, if we're going to decarbonize the grid and grow the grid, how do we do that? And we probably end up with a more decentralized model, as we talked about before.
Right, right.
Buttressed by some main resources like the nuclear plants and so on. We'll extend the lives of those as much as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring in more of this different storage technology, some modular nuclear. It's certainly going to look a lot different than the grid we know in the past. And it's going to require a lot of creative thinking.
Yeah.
And it's also going to require some goodwill. Like if we want to all point fingers at each other as a society and say, oh, you screwed up that. People are going to have fear of doing anything innovative. And so there's a certain level of trust and willingness to fail, or at least fail fast and learn those lessons that we're going to have to go through, because we're in a space we've never been in before, both mm-hmm. with respect to climate, with technological innovation, and where we are as a society.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. As far as, offering tax incentives to do it, it always feels like the winners and losers are picked by our legislatures rather than letting the market pick them. Hey, go compete. You just talked about something, the most bizarre thing I'm still trying to get my head around. You're saying a big ball of iron that rusts can produce electricity?
Yes, it produces electricity in the process of rusting, and then they de-rust it, and they use electricity to de-rust it. So that's when they sort of charge the battery back up again.
That's just nuts.
So there's a contract that just got signed to put these things in northern Maine in 2028, and I think it's 68 megawatts and 100 hours of duration.
Gotcha.
So
they're going to be like a big storage. You're going to store it. The energy's going to be stored there. In a ball of iron.
Yes.
It's mind blowing.
So
cool.
Yeah, they're putting it on it's going to be on the Lincoln, Maine. It's 85 megawatts actually, and 8,500 megawatt hours. So yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting is how fast technology is moving.
Yeah.
If you look at solar, for example, in 2009, this entire country had 1,000 megawatts of installed solar. Now we have over 130,000 megawatts of that, and about 30 of it is on people's rooftops around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's really interesting when tech gets adopted, the S-curve, as you mentioned before, mainframes to distributed computer, that happened in no time.
Yeah, and so, right. I mean, the other thing about solar is I still can't figure out the math as far as spending the amount of money to put it on your roof and all that fun stuff. But if a data center wants to pay me, center wants to pay me $200 a month or $100 a month or $50 a month, something per month to put that solar panel up where the math makes obvious sense, you'll see solar go up like crazy. Rather than giving them massive tax breaks, incentivize us to collaborate as a distributed electric grid where we – okay, we're going to bring this data center in. Go ahead and put them next to Millstone, but pay the solar panel people a fee. Now you're incentivizing the market to do it rather than having some crazy tax break and all these crazy calculations. Just pay us.
So the one I agree in principle. The one challenge would be basically now you'd have the data center provision from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. And then what do you do the rest of the time?
They're still next to the nuclear power plant, but we're the ones that are going to offset the issue that everyone's worried about as far as not having enough juice. You're paying the people who have distributed the solar panels across the state.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get killed two birds with one stone, right? That's the kind of thinking we need. Not that I'm right or anything.
Well, I mean, the biggest challenge from a nuanced perspective is the period where New England faces the greatest risk is right after the sun goes down. That's now when our peak is the worst. In the summertime, that's when the AC is still running full blast, right? In the wintertime, it's when the heating is going.
Yeah, but all I need is an iron ball, you're saying. I'll put that in my basement.
It's going to help. I mean, one challenge with the iron ball is you lose more than half the electricity in that round trip. But nonetheless, if you got really cheap wind and really cheap solar, and this stuff is getting really, really cost effective.
Hmm.
Solar panels, every time there's a global cumulative doubling of the output of solar panels, the costs fall by roughly 20 to 25%. Same thing happens with batteries. And it's a dynamic that was first observed by economist Theodore Wright with airframes back in the early 1900s. Every time airframes doubled, labor costs fell 10 to 15%. Now it's a pretty predictable dynamic with widgets, you know, with something you mass produce at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's happening with solar. The other thing that's happening with solar is every year it gets about 0.5% more efficient. And since your panel typically is around 22% efficient, adding another 0.5% really matters. And now they're starting to make panels there are many in the field now that capture not only the sun energy, but the energy that bounces off the ground. So if you had a solar panel like 5 feet off the ground on a perfectly sunny February day after snowfall, you'd pick up another 40% energy from the albedo effect.
Wow.
And then they're making panels now, Eric, think about a solar panel. Right now, that panel captures one spectrum of the sunlight. But imagine if you made a panel that was like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yep.
And the bread could absorb, and the peanut butter could absorb, and the jelly could absorb. That's called heterojunction.
Yeah, SciFriday was talking about that. I heard that.
Yeah.
There, and it was like all those different spectrums, they put out different amounts of energy.
Yeah.
If you can capture those spectrums, you get more power.
Yes. So, you know, that's kind of the hope is that with computational capability and really smart people, and I'll give you one example, is the company in China, Contemporary Amperex Technology, that makes 34% of the world's lithium-ion batteries,
mm-hmm.
they have a 40-acre campus with 1,000 PhD material scientists.
Wow.
Just working on better battery chemistry. And, of course, you know, we have counterparts in this country at Tesla and companies like Samsung and SK Innovations in Korea and so on. So, you know, without question, all these technologies are going to get better. The real question is how quickly and at what cost.
So I guess the big question I guess I have for you, Peter, is so let's think about this whole project that they want to put there on Millstone. Just based on your expertise, can we do it? Should we do it? Will ratepayers pay for it? Understanding all the facts of as a community, we should try to make progress happen, but there's still the reality of living in Connecticut on the average of $70,000, the high taxes, the high cost of food. Do you think that the ratepayers are going to see a much of an increase in their cost if they put this data center in there? What is your, you know, top of the head advice for the ratepayers in the area? Are they going to, should they be for it or against it as far as this? And I know it's kind of a big question, but.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, if you look at it as an economist from that perspective,
yeah,
I don't see how costs can't go up. You've got a resource that provides about 50% of the energy to Connecticut, and it's carbon free.
Right.
Yeah. And now you're going to basically have to cobble together that energy from other resources. You fundamentally shifted that supply demand curve,
right.
and you basically pulled the supply back by 50% right now. Of course, power prices are set a little bit differently, but nonetheless,
mm-hmm.
all things being equal, at a minimum, there should be some economic studies looking at the potential impacts of this, understanding what price changes are likely to result from that kind of a shift in supply.
Yeah.
And also modeling, okay, what's now going to happen with transmission flows? What kind of investments are going to be made? And if somebody wants to do something like this, then the ratepayers should be made whole.
Right. And the thing is always, we somehow, for some reason, even in utilities, we discount massive usage versus smaller usage. Like,
yeah.
You know, water departments discount ski resorts to use water to make snow. It makes no sense to me, right? Same thing with power. You shouldn't be discounting the massive user. You should be charging them because they're using more of the resource. So if you allow for making the ratepayer whole by taking a piece of what they are selling in AI and applying it to the public service fee that we're being hit with as ratepayers, you might be able to come to an agreement that's fair for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever run an agreement that everybody thinks is fair.
Everybody.
I think basically, if you come to agreement that everybody thinks is terrible, you probably found the right one.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah.
Good point. So yeah, so you're probably predicting that our costs of electricity are going to go further up if this is cited on Millstone, and I would tend to agree that math seems pretty straightforward. But you're not saying you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, the nukes also get a federal subsidy of 0.3 cents a kilowatt hour right now. So like, how's that going to be? You know, which helps right now make Millstone more cost competitive in the market. And lowers prices for everybody. Does the data center take advantage of that? Do they get that subsidy now? I mean, there's also funny little things like that. 0.3 cents actually matters a lot to people's pockets when all is said and done.
I think Jimmy Carter's still getting like some sort of subsidy for peanut farming. So yeah, you're right. I mean, that kind of stuff's got to stop.
Yeah.
Once you put a money making monstrosity right there, that's going to be generating AI for the rest of us because we need artificial intelligence to help us move on as a society. Yeah, there shouldn't be subsidies like that. If they want to be there, so don't make it cheaper for them to be there. Charge them.
Yeah, and really, at the end of the day, they should find their way to the most cost. You know, look, it's a competitive industry. Right. So one would hope that ultimately those data centers locate where it makes the most sense for them.
Right.
And what I found in my studies is some are going to end up in Australia. Malaysia is putting out the welcome mat for data centers. A lot of places around the world are trying, you know, the Nordic countries that have still an abundance of hydro are saying, we'll take some. In fact, there's a massive olivine mine that's been hauled out inside a mountain for mining that's now empty, and they want to fill that with cabinets of processors in Norway. I mean, there's some really interesting, funky stuff going on.
Yeah.
And places like Facebook has a data center in Luleå, which is in Sweden. It's north of the Arctic Circle. How come? Because they don't have to cool it. They just open the doors, windows, if you will, and it's basically they get free cool.
Yeah, I've also heard of them wanting to put it under the ocean, which, again, doesn't seem like the smartest idea. But
yeah, Microsoft wanted to do that for the cooling issues, but I think they've I think they've backed off of that from the cost.
Yeah, I like the idea of opening the door and just cooling it down. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, well, it's been wonderful chatting with you, Peter, on this topic, and I hope we can reach out to you again. Is there anything you can share with folks as far as if they want to find more information about what you're writing about?
Yeah, there's only one of me in the world, Peter Kelly Detweiler. So LinkedIn is the place to go, typically. Yeah. I welcome connections there. And for anyone who does want to understand the power industry, look, I've been in it for 20 years, and I was an expert in one small area. And then 10 years ago, I started writing for Forbes. And ultimately, I thought, I want to write a book because I want to describe this in a way that the average layman could understand how all these pieces are connected in this really sophisticated thing.
Mm-hmm.
So some companies actually make my book required reading when they, for the poor folks that are onboarding with them, they all have to read my book, and that's time they never get back. But I've been told by a number of them that it's actually been very helpful for them to understand, oh, this is how it all works. Here's how a gas generator works. Here's what's going on with solar. Here's what's happening with nukes or EVs and so on. So, yeah, you can find my book on Amazon or, you know, other places, and you might find that just a useful also complement to your understanding of the space.
We'll put a link to it there, and I do, I mean, that's how we feel about most of the hours people spend listening to our program, but I think this hour they actually got something out of it, and we do appreciate your time, but we'll put that link there. Yeah, we're so illiterate when it comes to how our how that toast actually gets toasted, that and it's very complicated, and I've learned something today, and I do appreciate your time, and keep in touch with us. If you have any AI data center related energy news for us, please reach out. We'd love to have you on again.
Thank you, Eric. If I can add one more thing, my website is peterkellydetweiler.com. I do a weekly free 5-minute video on energy stories from around the world that move the needle. I often cover data centers. And if you just go to my website and go down, you can sign up for it with an email. It's again, another 5 minutes you'll never get back. But if folks are interested in the power grid, people say it's a good way that they don't have to read the stuff. I do it for them.
I love it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a real pleasure for me, and I have loved the questions that you've been posing in this really fascinating and important conversation.
Thanks, Peter, very much. And we'll link everything over at computertalkwithtab.com for you so you guys don't have to think about it. Thank you again, Peter.
Be well. Thank
All right, you too. Bye-bye. That was a wonderful conversation. I mean, it's great to have an expert like that.
Yeah. I mean, I learned more in, 45 minutes about power than I had probably known in my entire life before then. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Iron balls that produce. That's just crazy. So we'll put all the information, we'll link everything about Peter out there. And I think we do all need to become more, you know, like we talk about, you know, Peter, Dennis always talks about, we want you to be geeks too. We want you to understand your computer. We don't want you to be computer illiterate. That's why we link you to training over there with Wes Bryan. We want to bring more understanding. So at least when we have these political discussions about why or what, why we should or shouldn't site a data center next to a nuclear power plant, we really need to come at it with some level of basic understanding and not just say, not in my backyard. NIMBY is how basically Connecticut exists. And there's just so much, you know, ignorant discussion about this stuff. And we all need to, at least if we want to participate in this society, we need to have some level of basic understanding. And again, Dennis and I are not the sharpest tools in the shed. I should talk to myself. I'm not the sharpest tool in my shed.
I am not either. Trust me.
So we all need to kind of educate ourselves so that we are at least you can be at a cocktail party and say, hey, did you know you could use iron balls to power things up?
Or
now you do.
Or use people's electric cars as a power distribution grid.
Yeah, very cool idea. Right? You know, we all have these massive batteries driving around in Connecticut. We may as well try to use them. Now, unfortunately, Ford said they're going to get out of the EV business or shrink it a lot. That was just recently talked about. Because, again, the cost of – they're not making any money on this, costing them more per vehicle. But at some point we'll get there. Everything we talked about has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com. Don't forget also, we're doing our big electronics e-cycling event. It's going to be in East Hartford on September 21st. We are going to be broadcasting live from our world headquarters in East Hartford on Little Bissell Street there. It's a one-way street. It's free. So if you've got a bunch of electronic equipment or you've got a bunch of empty ink cartridges, Environmental Office Solutions in East Hartford, they're a client and a partner in this event. They'll take it off your hands and they'll either repurpose it, which is great, so it doesn't even end up in a landfill, or they'll responsibly recycle your electronic equipment. Whether you're a business or it's home use, come on down on September 21st, put it on your calendar. Bring all your electronic equipment that you want to get rid of responsibly so it doesn't end up in some landfill. And I will be there from, I guess, 9 to noon when the show runs, and just buzz through there. It's free. We'll collect it, take it off your hands, and you can feel a little better about getting rid of your electronic equipment rather than having it end up in the landfill. So we'll put a link to that as well. So again, thanks, Mike G, for posting everything over on our Facebook page, the Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network. If you want to become a member, it's just a private group. Ask to become a member. You can join. Lots of great discussion happens throughout the week there. If you follow us at Tab Computer Sys on X, everything will get to your news feed. Elon will not stop it. And then, of course, Dennis has posted everything over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com.
And remember, like Eric said before, we want you to be geeks too.
And thank you, Carolyn, for producing. See you next Saturday.